I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beat and Track Podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode, I sit down with journalist and sports commentator Bradley Walton. I met Brad a couple of years ago now when I attended a Cage Warriors mixed martial arts event in London during lockdown, I think, or in one of the sort of gaps in lockdown. And we was invited along and the co-host of my mixed martial arts podcast, Blake Harrison, former guest of the show, Blake Harrison, were invited to this kind of closed doors event, which was incredible. And Brad was one of the commentators, and former guest of the show and owner of the Distraction Pieces Network, Screw Pip, had long told me that Brad was a top lad, and he wasn't wrong. And since then, Brad's kindly given up his time and come on the MMA Fan Podcast. We talk about this a little bit at the beginning anyway, but it was really nice to kind of get Brad on to talk about something aside from mixed martial arts. And we have a lovely chat about music. And you're going to hear it in a minute, because I've got to do some thank yous first. So I want to thank Scroobius Pip, because, well, he's the podfather and he owns the Distraction Pieces Network, which this podcast is super proud to be part of. There's amazing podcasts over there. Go check out the Distraction Pieces Network, because I think there must be close to 10 podcasts on there now. And they're wonderful. A complete mixed bag of pod chats. And yeah, I advise you go check them out. I would like to thank the team at the Blue Murder Club podcast. It's a true crime podcast and it's wonderful. If you go and check out their back catalogue, you might see a few guests that have been on Off the Beaten Track guesting over there as well. And it's the team over there that produce this podcast. So big thanks to the team at Blue Murder Club Podcast. The biggest thanks always go to you lot, because you continue to support this podcast as we fast approach 500 episodes. That's insane. 500 episodes. I mean, two a week. And it's never anything but a joy. And you know, to put out two podcasts a week is a lot of work, but who am I kidding? I get to sit down with people who I really respect, and I get to talk about the thing that I like talking about the most, which is music. And the fact that you lot listen, well, that's a proper Brucey bonus. So big thanks to yous for continuing to support this podcast. Now, this is the bit where I guess most people just think, oh, get on with the good bit, get the chat on and fast forward this, but don't, because I'm going to ask you, I'm going to tell you a few ways in which you can kind of support the podcast other than just listening. So we're on social media. We're on Instagram, Twitter and Facebook. So I'd urge you to go over there and give us a little follow or a comment or a like. Probably most active on Instagram and Facebook. You can go to wherever you listen to the podcast, whatever your listening platform is, whether it's Apple Podcasts or Spotify or Podbean or wherever you get your pods, and just give us a follow or a subscribe. And if you can leave a comment, that's amazing. These things like really do help podcasters. One of the other things you can do is go and have a little look. It's totally free to have a look. Go over to Patreon. Go over to patreon.com/offthebeatandtrack. And while you're over there, you can watch a little video of my silly face telling you about what you get at Patreon. I can tell you now anyway, it won't take long. But it's almost like a sort of crowdfunder support platform. And I put up loads of stuff over there. And being very aware that this country's on his arse at the moment and we're all skint, I keep it to 70 pence a month. It works at $1 a month. And sign up for a month at $1 and then you can rinse the back catalogue if you want, because there's hundreds of episodes over there. But what you also get is I put the videos up so you can watch Off the Beaten Track each week if you like to watch your podcasts. I also put up little radio shows and mixtapes and things like that, so you can hear me lisping all over your favourite records and doing my little radio shows. And there's hundreds in the back catalogue, so you can just go and access them all and enjoy them. But what I do once a month as well is I do a little live show, a little online live show where all the Patreons turn up, and we pick a question from a podcast, and everybody sort of brings along their track choices, and it's lovely, and it's a really non-judgy thing. It's not like everybody's trying to act indie people with these obscure B-sides. It's just a really lovely gang of people that are just kind of talking about records that they loved and records that meant something at, you know, at certain points in their lives, and it's just a nice little hit of nostalgia and a nice little chat. And you can turn up and get really involved and you know, talk about what your records are, or you can just sit there with your mic off and your camera off if you don't really want to sort of get too involved. You just want to watch the show and enjoy it. However it works for you is what I'd encourage. And so all of that comes in at a dollar a month. So if you can spare that, like I said at the beginning, just sign up for 1 month, rinse the back catalogue, and then unsubscribe. Or if you like what you get, it's going to charge you 70 pence a month. And that's at Patreon, patreon.com/offthebeatandtrack. There's a link to it in the show notes to this podcast. Also, there's a link there to a thing called Buy Me a Coffee, and you can just go over there, and if you just want to go ping and buy me a coffee, that's amazing, because I like a coffee, and it keeps me going, keeps me recording all these podcasts. I've literally got a cup in my hand. There you go. Got a cup in my hand as we speak. Buy us a coffee. That's in the show notes as well. Or just nudge your mate and go, there's a lispy old geezer from Essex that chats to amazing people about their lives, and it's called Off the Beaten Track, and you should go and give it a listen. Anyway, your one-stop shop for everything you need to know about the podcast, socials and Patreons and everything, is offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. Right, let's get on with it. Please enjoy Off the Beaten Track podcast with the delightful Bradley Walton.
It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whippin.
We are recording. Bradley Walton, how are you, mate?
I'm very well, thank you, sir. I'm very well indeed. I have been looking forward to this chat for a long time.
Good, good. Well,
long time listener, first time caller.
This is what's lovely, because we've met in a very different world. I have an MMA podcast, and I met you through your commentary work that you do for Cage Warriors, and then you come and guested on the MMA fan podcast with Blake and I, and then out of the blue you post a comment that you listen to this. So it was like, well, this is a surprise, and a lovely surprise. So before we jump into that, I don't know why, because you work within, a commentator in a mixed martial arts organization. Why that would mean you don't like music, I don't know why I presumed that. Tell me about a little bit about your relationship with music and how important it's been in your life, mate.
I love music. I'm one of those really cliche people when you say, like, oh, what kind of music you like? And I say, oh, I like a bit of everything. Do you know what I mean? I'm a bit of a fence sitter in that respect. It's just something that's, I always remember being part of life and being a very, very young age. My dad had a really cool, stack stereo system back in the day when I was a kid. And, that meant that I got his old one in my bedroom. So I had, one of those ones with like the wooden panels around the, so like in a wooden box, essentially, and then you got the tape decks, the equalizer, the radio, and then the LP deck on top. And then underneath it was a little glass cabinet with records in.
Yeah.
So whatever my dad would listen to downstairs that I liked, I'd kind of sneak up into my bedroom and hide it amidst all the old crap records that he didn't want to listen to anymore. I think it had Frank Sidebottom's Timply LP in there at one point.
Oh, mate. And, do you know what? First person in 481 episodes to mention Frank Sidebottom. Shout out Frank Sidebottom. The greatest music documentary ever made was the recent Frank Sidebottom documentary.
Superb, wasn't it?
Oh, incredible. What an absolute genius and tortured genius Chris Seavey was. Yeah, I'm glad that we finally got a mention of Frank Sidebottom on this podcast. Anyway, I digress. Go on, carry on. Sorry, he was nicking records.
Yeah, so I had stuff like that. It was like my dad's cast off. So I had the Young Ones record as well, Hole in My Shoe, and I don't even know if I liked it or not, but it was just the fact that they were like my kind of first two LPs, and then like I said, I just started nicking stuff that he was playing downstairs, and so I had I think Paranoid by Black Sabbath was one that I got into at a really young age. We had music homework when I was really young, and you had to pick 10 songs and write, is it a happy song or a sad song? Is it a fast song or a slow song? Yeah. You know, that's so that kind of age, not anything particularly musical, just like very, very basic stuff. And I was going to do like whatever was on Top of the Pops. And my dad was like, no, I'll do this Black Sabbath album. So I got 10 out of 10 and great taste in music written on my homework. So
fantastic.
was well in there with the music teachers early on. But yeah, I still have a lot of happy memories based around music. My parents had a little off license when I was a kid, and I used to go to like the cash and carriage with my dad constantly there and back in the van, a couple of hours drive, and there was always music on in the van. So just loads of nice memories of, you know, being sat with the old man and listening to Pink Floyd and whatever prog rock he was into at the time. And it's just kind of never left me. Like, you know, I worked as a journalist for many years, so I've sat at home a lot writing. And, you know, if you've got the TV on, it's a distraction. So it's always been records for me in the background. And then, of course, you know, the job that I do now, a big part of that's the presentation. And, you know, you have fighters who walk out to iconic theme tunes. And that's something I always enjoy listening to. And we've started with Cage Warriors doing Spotify playlists of all the walkout songs, because you constantly get people sort of, you know, tweeting in on social media like, oh, what was such and such a buddy's walkout song? So we do playlists now. So if you've been to an event and you heard a good song that you like, you can go back and go down the playlist and find it. So yeah, I try and involve it whenever I can. Like if you read anything that I write on cagewarriors.com, there's inevitably little cheeky music references that I hope at least one person out there will get, but otherwise they're just for my own amusement.
Well, it was going to be something I wanted to sort of talk about was fighters walkout music, and it ties in perfectly because obviously as they're being introduced into the arena as they make their walk to the octagon, and so with that in mind, we'll pull back onto that in a sec, but I'm going to ask you for track one, which is the song that you regard as having the greatest ever intro, please, Brad.
I mean, I should probably put a disclaimer out first, because this is a Kiss song. And look, some people like steak tartare, but every now and again, you want a Big Mac, right? And for me, that's Kiss in a nutshell. You know, they're not writing a song like Stairway to Heaven, but they'll do a big, loud, stupid, feel-good rock song.
Yeah.
And Detroit Rock City, for me, is the absolute epitome of a great Kiss song. My first Kiss record that I bought was a really bad one. It was called Unmasked, and it was kind of when they were in a bit of a flux. Like they'd had some of the early band members leave, and the musical direction was a bit messed up.
Was this when they kind of quit the makeup as well?
So this was just before they quit the makeup. So Peter Criss had left. Ace Frehley pretty much didn't do anything on the record, and they were the talented musicians of the group, really. So this album, Unmasked, it was very over polished and poppy. Like they'd had the big hit with I Was Made for Loving You, which is essentially sort of a disco song, really. And Unmasked, they kind of went that over polished, over produced poppy style, and it just didn't go down well at all. And I remember I picked the album based on the cover. I'd never heard a Kiss song before outside I Was Made for Loving You, and I just got taken by the look, and I thought, oh man, these guys look pretty cool. And bought the album Unmasked. The cover of it was a comic book, which again, like, I was really into comic books, so I thought it looked cool. Not a great album. But the inlay actually had like a little biography thing that sort of said, oh, you know, this is generally regarded as one of the musical low points. So I thought, well, there must be some good stuff out there. And I convinced my mom to take me back to the record shop and buy me another Kiss record. And she goes, right, get the Greatest Hits album and then work back from there.
Yeah.
So I got, I mean, they knock a Greatest Hits album out every few years, to be honest, Kiss.
Mm.
But I got Greatest Kiss and the first track on it was Detroit Rock City. And I just got it straight away. The way it starts off, you get the sort of dang a dang a dang a dang with the guitars the great drum fill. And it reminds me of like a car engine starting over and then kicking in. And that song for me is just, it's been the start of so many great nights out. Like if I'm getting ready to go out, I'll put that on and I'm like, yeah, I'm in the mood. Or even just doing housework. You know, if you want to put the Hoover around, then you need a bit of energy. Like, stick Detroit Rock City on, and if you're not bopping around with your Hoover after 2 minutes, you need to check your pulse, man. I think it's just big, cheap, good fun, and I love it.
Wonderful. Well, look, it's impossible not to ask you this. If you was to find yourself walking into that cage, what would your walkout music be? Thought about this, Brad.
That's tough. I'm probably the least dangerous guy in the whole of the mixed martial arts industry, so I've never really thought too much into it. It probably would be something like Kiss, actually, like maybe God of Thunder or something like that, or War Machine. That'd be a good walkout tune. Nice and sort of brooding and heavy, something with the big drums. Yeah, probably something like that.
Absolutely. What's been your favorite walkout from any organization? You know, it can be Cage Warriors or UFC or whatever. Has there been any that has just struck you and like literally shook you to the bones?
There's been a few over different eras. I mean, if you go kind of like way back, I think the first guy to really have a sort of an iconic walkout was Tito Ortiz.
Mm.
And it was a very different time. It was when MMA was very much bad tribal tattoos and mohawks. And of course he had the shorts with the flames on and the beanie with the flames on, which I'm sure was very cool back in 2001. Yeah. Doesn't necessarily hold up today, but he would come out to Limp Bizkit.
Yeah.
And it was just so of its time.
Yeah.
And at the time as well, the UFC had sort of just been taken over by new owners and they were really trying to make it something cool, and they had the walkouts. They had like almost pro wrestling style walkouts with big screens and flames going off and fireworks, and Tito Ortiz walking out to break stuff. It was just perfect for what it was at the time. But like I think kind of moving on from that, like Anderson Silva coming out to Ain't No Sunshine, and it's not a fight song at all. You know, it's not something that you would think about, you know, is getting you in the mood, getting the adrenaline going, but it just personified like how calm he was and how confident he was in his skills that he would just stroll out to that. You know, hearing it live in an arena, it genuinely does send shivers through your bones. And I guess another one would be, there's a guy called Yoshihiro Akiyama who would come out to Time to Say Goodbye. And again, not a fight song, but they would sort of bathe the arena in white light and fantastic visual effects. Yeah. And just hearing him like come out to this really just chilled song. It was just a wild way to set up an atmosphere for a fight.
Perfect. Did you catch, I mean, from the Cage Warriors days through to where he's at now as a global superstar, Paddy the Baddy's walkouts are always good to Basement Jacks and Heads Will Roll. That little hybrid mashup of that always seems to get the crowd going. But did you see, it's Peter Queeley, isn't it? In Bellator, when he comes out to Zombie, did you see?
Yeah.
Fucking hell, that was goosebumps. That was.
There was one fight in particular. I can't remember exactly who it was, but Queeley walked out first, and the crowd carried on singing Zombie while his opponent was walking out, and you couldn't hear his opponent's theme tune. Pete's a cool guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's a guy who fights with his heart on his sleeve, wins some, loses some, but those entrances are absolutely epic.
Yeah.
Just phenomenal in Dublin as well.
Yeah.
You know, reminds me of like when McGregor used to come out to Foggy Dew in Cage Warriors and then that first ever UFC Dublin.
Yeah.
And he came out to a mashup of Foggy Dew and the Notorious by Notorious B.I.G. And just once in a lifetime moments.
Wonderful. Well, let's take you back. First song you remember hearing, please, Brad, that you had an emotional response to.
I really struggled with this one, actually, because there's kind of a few over the years. I do remember getting very into Everything I Do It For You by Bryan Adams, which
you
was
couldn't not. It was in your ear holes for 16 weeks at number one, mate.
Yeah, exactly. I remember pestering my nan until she bought me the cassette single of it. But I don't know if I actually ever, you know, it wasn't particularly emotional. I think I just liked it as a kid. But the one I've gone for is a song called Keep Talking by Pink Floyd from the Division Bell album. And there's a couple of reasons. I think firstly, it was my first Pink Floyd album. There was another that came out when I was a bit younger, but I was obviously too young to be listening to stuff then. But this is the first album that I remember coming out and sort of being excited about it before it came out.
Yeah.
My dad was a huge Pink Floyd fan, and that really rubbed off on me. And I just remember him being really pumped about this new Pink Floyd album. And it's not the best Pink Floyd album. It's not my favorite Pink Floyd album, but it was kind of the first one that came out that I was sort of able to listen to from start to finish as a new Pink Floyd album, and just loved every single track on it. The reason that I chose this track in particular is that it opens up with a really poignant speech by Stephen Hawking. And he says something along the lines of, I'm going to try and get this right. For millions of years, mankind lived just like the animals. Then something happened that unlocked the power of our imagination. We learned to talk. And I just found that really like, wow, that's a really kind of like sort of deep and meaningful thing.
Yeah.
And language has always been a huge part of my life, either as a writer or a commentator. So even as a young kid, well, I was probably only about 10 when that album came out, it just kind of really stuck with me. But the main reason it stuck with me was that my late uncle at the time had motor neuron disease, and he had a voice box.
Okay.
And sounded exactly like Stephen Hawking.
Sure.
And at the time as a kid, it was like, it was a bit embarrassing. And, you know, I think, you know, sort of attitudes around disability have changed massively, you know, since I was 10 years old. And, you know, it was always a bit like, oh, I don't really want to kind of talk about this. And it was a bit embarrassing sort of thing. So to hear that on a record, which I thought was absolutely fantastic, was pretty cool. And then he used to let us play with the box when we were around there. So I used to type the Stephen Hawking quote in and make him say it was fantastic.
That's quite heavy music for, I mean, Division Bell come out, what, 90, maybe 91?
94.
94. Oh, 94. Right. Okay. How old would you have been then?
I was 10, so I would have been 9 or 10.
That's intense music for a 9, you know, or a 10-year-old to be listening to, Pink Floyd. But you'd already been kind of, sort of, you know, you'd been exposed to Pink Floyd quite a lot in, I presume, in the dad's car. And, right. And so what you felt, this was like the first time that you sort of owned a bit of Pink Floyd in your own right, rather than it sort of being...
Yeah, absolutely. Like, sort of, like my dad's favorite Pink Floyd album is Wish You Were Here. Mm-hmm. And obviously Dark Side of the Moon and The Wall. He went to see The Wall live, which I'm incredibly jealous of.
Yeah.
But yeah, this was the first sort of new one. And like I say, I just remember him banging on about, oh, this album's coming out. And it was kind of a really big thing when it actually dropped. And yeah, like he went and got the tape on the first day. And I listened to it so much in the van, and I got a copy of it as soon as I could. So I had a little double tape deck on my stereo system. So I made a copy of it, and it was just in my Walkman constantly. Like the amount of pocket money I must have got through on batteries just listening to that until it started slowing down was absolutely insane. But yeah, like I say, it's just it was my first Pink Floyd album, and you know, looking back today, there's obviously there's a lot. You know, a lot of much better Pink Floyd music. And what I didn't get at the time was kind of all the sort of bitterness in the lyrics towards Roger Waters.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But obviously, you know, it was quite funny to kind of pick that up, you know, going back to the album at a later age. It's kind of like Oasis, really. You go through stages of thinking that Liam Gallagher was the cool one, and then Noel was the cool one, and now Liam's the cool one again.
Yeah.
And I kind of went through that a bit with Roger Waters and Dave Gilmour, but... Yeah. You know, it is what it is. I appreciate what they both did. And I mean, The Wall and Dark Side of the Moon are just absolutely absolutely classic pieces of music. Yeah. I mean, I probably listen to Dark Side of the Moon once a week, start to finish.
Yeah, he's a masterpiece. Tell me the exact emotion that you got when you heard that for the first time.
I think it was, I don't know, maybe almost a bit of pride, really. Just like hearing something like that and just being able to relate it to my uncle.
Yeah.
And it was like, wow, this is actually really cool. It's not something I need to be embarrassed about or keep quiet. And then I remember, like, you know, sort of playing the tune to people at school, and you know, when you'd have like a non-uniform day and you could take stuff in and someone would take a little boombox in, and yeah. I'd put this song on and be like, oh, my uncle's got one of these.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess the emotion was sort of was more pride than anything else.
Oh, that's wonderful. Where was growing up? Where was home?
So home was originally Manchester, from Greater Manchester. Lived there till I was 13. And when I was 13, my dad got a job in Holland, and he worked out there for about 6 months on a contract. And at the end of it, they extended it, and then they were going to extend it again for another year or 2 years or something. And my mum was just, I didn't want the family to be split up. And obviously, you know, me sort of entering the terrible teens and my brother 4 years behind me, she didn't want that sort of a situation where my dad was like flying home every other weekend and not there during the week. So they just very quickly made the decision, I think over the space of about 2 weeks, to sort of up sticks and take us all out there. My dad worked for Shell at the time, and there was a huge Shell facility over there, and also it wasn't too far away from The Hague, so you've got all the European courts and the embassies and stuff. So there was a British school and an American school just outside The Hague. So we went to the British school. So it was quite good in the fact that we still got like all the British curriculum. But then, you know, being able to go to school in a different country and experience that. And with it being like an international school as well, there was kids from like 60 odd different countries.
Yeah.
So like for me, going from like a pretty crap, rough school in a shitty part of Manchester, it was daunting, because it was like, okay, now you're going to school with all these rich kids and ambassadors kids and stuff. And I'm like, how am I going to deal with this? I'm just not going to fit in at all. But then getting there and realizing that kids just don't really care about stuff like that. Like you bond over music, you bond over video games, you bond over sports. Yeah. And it went from being like sort of really like real trepidation to just being like, well, you know what, actually I can walk into any room anywhere on the planet and have a conversation with someone and never feel like I'm any better or worse or anything else. So it was a big eye opener in that regard. Like the trepidation disappeared pretty quickly. And like I say, the experience of like getting to go to a different country and experience a different culture quite early on really set me up, I think. Still anymore, I'm about all over the place. So I think that's probably come from there, I guess.
Yeah. So just, you know, one of the skills that you said that, you took from that was the fact that, you know, to this day you feel comfortable walking into a room and having a conversation with people. That might just sound like a sort of general little sentence, but that would also be terrifying for a huge amount of people. And I'm confident now having this conversation now, but I couldn't walk into a room of strangers and feel comfortable and confident enough to just, you know, throw myself in the mix. Did you always have that kind of confidence, or do you think that come from, you know, moving schools at such an important age as well, 13, when you've almost found your group of friends, you're starting to really form who you are, and then up sticks and you move to another country, let alone another school. Do you think that gave you an inner confidence?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, I think so. Like, I'd always been quite chatty and quite talkative as a kid. And, you know, I always made friends quite easily and had like had lots of different groups of friends, you know, friends in school and friends from stuff out of school. But yeah, certainly moving over there, like, really helped with that. Because I guess like my sort of main group of friends were like the sporty kids, because I was like doing a bit of sport back then. But then, like, musically, I was getting into, like, rock and metal and stuff like that. So I used to wear a long black leather trench coat and hang out with all, like, the goth kids.
Yeah.
But then I was also into video games and stuff. So I used to hang out with the nerdy kids. And
yeah,
I just, yeah, I've never, it really helped sort of, like, knock down any barriers that I had. Because when I got there, I was very much like, I don't want to talk to anyone. These people are better than me. These people are, you know, going to know things that I don't, like, they're going to be smarter than me. And then you just realize,
did
like,
you pull
it's,
that?
Just, it's all in your head.
Did that come from going out there knowing that you'd come from a, you know, a working class background in Manchester?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there was a really odd experience. And I think it made me quite cynical of life, actually, when I very first moved over there, just before I'd left. We had a recruitment day at my primary school in Manchester. I don't know if recruitment day is the right word, but basically the armed forces sent a lot of people. So there was Army, Navy, and Royal Marines, I think. And they showed us all these videos, and it was basically like videos of like tanks shooting things and people firing machine guns and trying to, you know, recruit people into the cadets to join like the Royal Marines and infantry and stuff. And then about 2 weeks after I started at the school in Holland, which is obviously a private school, they said, oh, we've got the armed forces coming in to do this, you know, what's it day? And I was like, oh, I've already seen this. And then it was completely different. It was all about like officer training, and I was just like, you pieces of shit, like, yeah. this is genuinely awful.
Yeah.
But yeah, that really kind of That really made me think, and it really, like, it gave me, I think, probably a healthy sense of cynicism.
Yeah.
But like I say, like, you know, my experiences with the actual people, the actual kids there, were absolutely fantastic. And you know, I think it helped that, you know, there were a lot of kids from working class backgrounds there too. Like a lot of the teachers' kids, like, so if you were a teacher over there, your kids got to go to the school. So there was enough kids who'd had similar backgrounds to me that I could kind of crack on with.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like you say, you know, as a kid, there's a lot of equalizers. Like, we all play the same sport. We all play the same video games. We all listen to the same music and get up to the same mischief. You know, whether your parents are super rich or whether they're not, or whether you come from a working class background, or whether you're the Nigerian ambassador's daughter who used to give us lifts around in she used to give us lifts home in a limousine.
I wasn't all bad.
No. I mean, I only lived about a 2 minute walk from school, but it's not an offer you turn down, really, is it? Do you want to hop in the back of my limo for a lift home? Yeah, sure. Why not?
Tell me the song that soundtracked your time at school, please, Brad.
I think every kid at some point or other needs to have a record that is going to deeply annoy or upset their parents. And for me, that was Mechanical Animals by Marilyn Manson. Mm. And I guess like the big song off that was Rock Is Dead. Like I said, I got kind of really into Kiss. I love the visual element of Kiss and the theatrics and the stage show. And I guess Marilyn Manson was just sort of that push to the extreme. You know, obviously he had a wild image and a wild stage show. And I remember I remember a couple of kids sort of having some Marilyn Manson stuff at school, and I remember being sat with my parents, and there was, I think it was like an MTV awards show that he did, he played Rock His Dead at, and he had a cross made out of TV screens that was on fire, and it was all very, you know, very extreme, very over the top, very, I mean, literally just parent bait, basically. Yeah. It was just meant to annoy people's parents and for kids to buy it to annoy their parents with. And I just remember my mum and dad sort of looking at me watching it and thinking, oh God, he's not going to start listening to this, is he?
Where have we gone
and,
wrong?
my mum says, oh, what do you think of that then? I was like, yeah, it's really good. It's really good. And about a week or so later, I said to my dad, I'm going to go and get the new Marilyn Manson album. And he goes, no, you're not. I don't know how old I was at the time, maybe 14 or so. And he goes, listen, he goes, I don't mind you listening to it. He goes, but you play your music too loud. Your little brother doesn't need to hear all that nonsense. And your mom doesn't need to hear all that nonsense. And it was really weird for me because I was like, well, you let me listen to Hand of Doom when I was about 8.
Yeah.
You know, do you know what I mean? Like song about a guy taking heroin, but we can't have Marilyn Manson. So I was a bit annoyed about that. So I went and bought it anyway and thought I'd done a really good job of hiding it in the CD rack in my bedroom, but he found it and I got to bollock him. about 3 weeks, I think he was more annoyed that I bought it and he'd said no than me actually buying it. And then about 2 or 3 weeks later, I went into my bedroom and it was there stuck in the top of the CD rack. So he put it back in. Oh. So I think that was sort of a silent truce. But I just remember it being like sort of my first like rebellious record purchase, yeah. I suppose. And it was a bit naughty and a bit out there. And I just loved like the whole, like the concept of it. So like it came in like a blue plastic CD case and you could take the inlay card out and turn the pages around. And if you inserted them back in, it showed up little bits of text and stuff that you couldn't see through the naked eye. I just thought that was really, really cool. And just the whole like, it was a concept album about an androgynous alien that had come down and become a rock star, which my mom embarrassed me with later on by saying, yeah, David Bowie did that about 35 years ago. And you've got that somewhere in your record collection as well. So I was like, no, yeah, never mind. But yeah, I don't know. It's a weird one now. It's obviously one of those situations whereby he's, you know, he's been accused of some not very nice things in recent years. To my knowledge, I don't think he's been in court over any of it.
I don't think so. No.
But you know, obviously, it's not a pleasant thing to hear. And then, but it's weird because it's like, you know, it's still your memories growing up listening to that kind of stuff. You know, there's plenty of people that have done horrible things that have produced great art, and I don't think there's a right answer to that debate. You know, should you separate the art from the artist? I think it comes down to personal choices. Completely. And you've got to take every case on his merits.
Completely. I couldn't agree more. And I think as somebody that was much older than 14, but was DJing in you know, an alternative club and seeing the impact, like way back when Sweet Dreams, the first sort of breakthrough track, I think, maybe. And then, you know, that was getting traction because it was obviously an iconic cover, but then they dropped Beautiful People and it's like, holy shit. And you see the video to Beautiful People and it's like, wow, this is fantastic. And being someone that grew up listening to like Nine Inch Nails and Bowie, you could see like, oh, he's got a bit of that and he's got a bit of that, but woo, just look at him. He looks incredible. And I think it was about 1996. At the time I was in a band and we got took into this record company office and they were sniffing around us and it was, oh, we're going to get signed. Oh, we're going to get a record deal. And we just was six lads with long hair that made, you know, rock music. And I just remember the guy just going, yeah, look, you know, I like all the songs and stuff. But to be honest, it's like, if you're into rock and you're young, you're going to want this. And he just held up Kerrang and it had a picture of Marilyn Manson on the cover. And I just thought, he's right. And it's like, if you're young, you want, you know, if I was lucky that I caught, when I was sort of 14, the Beastie Boys come out. So it was like the most shocking thing ever. And it was like, this is amazing. This is going to piss my parents off. And it was my punk. And every generation gets that. I worry in this generation where, you know, people have got Ed Sheeran and Adele. It's like there's got to be something out there that I'm sure there is. I'm sure there is. I'm just far too old to know. But
I remember coming home with, I think it must have been Kerrang, and it was Queens of the Stone Age. Were on the cover,
yeah,
and it was Josh Homme and Nick Oliveri on a train track, just covered in fake blood,
yeah.
And I just remember my mum saying, "What is this that you're reading now?" I was like, oh, it's a great, great band that I've just started listening to, Mum. You've got this to look forward to.
Nick Oliveri didn't even need the blood; he looked insane. Whatever, anything he ever done, it was just like that guy. He's walking very close to the edge. Right, okay. Well, let's move on to track four. Tell me about the first album or the first record you remember buying from a record store, please, Brad.
So, yeah, this was an interesting one. I had to really think about this because I remember getting my first pay packet from a paper round that I did and going straight to a record shop and buying just the three oddest combination of records, yeah, you could think of. I bought Nevermind. I bought a 2-CD Jungle compilation, mm-hmm, which I think I only kept because it had Chai FX original Nutter as the first track, okay, and everything else was rubbish. And I bought Enter the Wu-Tang 36 Chambers.
I'm not being and funny, like, but there's three bangers right there.
I know, but it's just a wild combination to get them all together. But I was like, was that the first one that I bought like with my own cash? And then I remembered my dad's parents moved to the Isle of Man, and we used to have to fly from Holland into Manchester, and then we'd drive and get a ferry, and the ferry had a little gift shop with music and tat and sweets and whatever else. And I bought Fat of the Land by the Prodigy. I must have had some pocket money, and it was a weird one because I remember Firestarter coming out, and absolutely sacrilege to say something like this now, but I just didn't rate it at all when I first heard it. I don't think I'd really heard much Prodigy before then. I was like, yeah, it's all right. And I think it might have like knocked something that I did like out of the top 10 on Top, yeah, of the Pops or something. So maybe I sort of harbored a little bit of animosity towards it. But then Breathe came out, and absolutely loved that. My dad absolutely loved it. And I think, I don't know if it was around his birthday or Father's Day or something, I tried to buy it for him in Asda, and then they wouldn't sell it to me because it had the parental advisory sticker on it. So I had to go and get the old man to convince them to let me buy this single for him. And I remember putting it on in the car, and it had a very explicit live version of Their Law, yeah, and Poison as the B-side to the single. And it just blew me away. And I was like, I need to hear more of these people. So when I saw Fat of the Land on this ferry to the Isle of Man, it was an instant purchase, a great way to spend $7.99 or whatever an album cost back then.
Absolutely.
But I mean, I listened to that album. I've not listened to it for a while, actually. And I was thinking to myself the other day, as soon as we finish this, I'm putting that on.
Yeah,
that's gonna be my Monday afternoon. But I guarantee, like, even having not listened to it for a while, I know every lyric to Diesel Power. I can sing the whole thing.
I was literally about to say, I played Diesel Power on Friday and like at my club, and it still sounds phenomenal.
It's great, isn't it? So, you know, you've got that kind of like industrial dance music. Diesel Power is like a bit of a rap song. You've got Fuel My Fire, which is kind of like a punky guitar driven. There's just nothing bad on it.
Yeah.
And you know, everyone, even with your favorite albums, there's one that you might skip. But for me, this is like a no skip album. Like, yeah, I could listen to it start to finish, never get bored of it. And I mean, when you're stuck in the Isle of Man for a week, you need something like this to get you through. Yeah. So,
oh mate, we're Essex finest, mate. We're very proud of them down here. And yeah, I mean, amazing to see that there's going to be more Prodigy stuff happening. I think it was only last week was the anniversary of Keith's passing, which was obviously like terrible when that happened. And you know, we talk about Marilyn Manson being an iconic front person for, you know, for a band. Is there anyone more iconic in the 90s than that kind of vision of Keith with the two green little mini mohawks and, you know, just losing his shit on stage? And it was just phenomenal. Did you ever catch the Prodigy live?
I didn't, you know, and it, honestly, one of my biggest regrets, because I had a few opportunities to go and see them over the years, and just through various things, never got round to it. Like the past sort of 15 years for me, like a lot of my weekends were at fight shows.
Yeah.
And when I get a weekend off, like you kind of just want to sit and chill. And I passed up the chance to go to quite a few gigs over the year, but there's nothing that upsets me more than not going to see Prodigy live. I'm going to try and get to one of the shows that they're doing now, but obviously I'm sure it'll be absolutely fantastic, but would have loved to have seen Keith. Like, I was never bold enough to actually shave the middle out, but I did have a spiky double mohawk that I dyed different colours at one point. What a guy. And I got to say as well, Firestarter did grow on me, obviously. It's absolutely fantastic. You know what I was thinking back then.
Well, you mentioned Poison and their lore, and I was so lucky that I got to see them at V97, the year this album dropped, and it felt like for us it was their homecoming. They've made it and they're playing in their back garden in Essex. And when they play Poison, to this day, I've never been at a gig where I've experienced anything like what I experienced when they play Poison. I've never seen a field bounce in unison the way it did. And that Fat of the Land was that, and it's an incredible record. But there's something about Poison. That's the bridging song for me. When like all the stuff on Jilted is still really kind of ravey in places, like Voodoo People and No Good Start the Dance, all amazing songs. But I think Poison is where you've got that hip-hop drum beat, which I think for me just seemed to just unlock something for Liam to really just experiment more with his love of hip-hop. And you hear that on Diesel Power more than anything, really. And just them huge hip-hop breakbeats, but with just like fucking huge guitars and just bleeps and tweaks. It's like, and the things of electronic music, I find, is it dates so quickly because it's all based around technology that, you know, it's constantly evolving. Yeah, I think there's records, and I think Fat of the Land is one of those that, I mean, that's what, 20, nearly 25 years old? It's something about that, isn't it? Could come out today and everybody would still be like, what is this? It sits somewhere like, you know, out of time, and it's a magical record.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
So, you've got an idea for a business. The store of your dreams. There's just one thing to figure out. Everything. That's why Shopify's all-in-one commerce platform makes it easy to sell online, in person, and everywhere else. Sell on social media, source products with an app to get that first sale feeling. It's the only solution that gives you everything you need to sell everywhere you want. So when you're ready to bring your idea to life, power it up with Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen.
Cool. It really is. Right. Let's go clubbing. Tell me the song that soundtracked your year's clubbing, please, Brad.
Yeah, I've had like had a few different phases when I was clubbing a lot. Growing up in Holland, like there's a big bar culture over there, so I was more of like into going to bars. Like the legal drinking age over there is 16, so like we were going to pubs and that when we were about 15, and getting into nightclubs was a bit harder. As you have a national ID card in Holland as well that you have to have, and that's pretty much the only ID that they accept in clubs. What they did though was that it was like a sort of a laminated card, like a, you know, with a sort of plasticky cover on it. But then they printed your details on top. So if you were born in 1984, you could scratch the 4 with a pin and make it into a 1. So managed
to take the boy
into...
out of Manchester, can't you?
I know, right? Where there's a will, there's a way. Yeah, so obviously the club scene over there was very like very trancy, very housey. Problem for me was my parents were going through a bit of a club renaissance at that time as well, and I bumped into them once in a nightclub, and then never wanted to go to a nightclub again for the rest of my life, because bumping into your mum and dad when all your mates are there is just, you know, just not cool. So I kind of stuck to the bars, but when I would come back to Holland to see all my, when I come back from Holland, like in the summer holidays and the school holidays to see all my Manchester mates, they were really into like the whole indie scene. And there just wasn't any of that in Holland. Like they never really got past like Oasis and stuff. And yeah, you know, there wasn't really anywhere you could go and listen to Stone Roses and the Happy Mondays. So I've just not really heard much of that stuff. And then I went to a place called Fifth Avenue in Manchester, which I think it's unfortunately gone now, but even before it went, it just became like a standard student club. But back in the day, it was like a proper indie type place. And you could get a Red Bull and vodka for £1. A beer was 50p. So what you do, you just get a pint glass with three Red Bull and vodkas in, £3, get on the dance floor. And I just remember being on the dance floor and Hallelujah by Happy Mondays coming on the club mix. And I was just away with the fairies. I was like, oh, this is absolutely fantastic. Because it's like, it's a nice beat, but obviously like being used to like sort of trance and house and stuff being a bit faster, it was nice to just have a little bob around dance. And like, just a really, you know, everyone in a, you know, a really sort of friendly atmosphere. And to be honest, like, I don't even think anyone was like doing any pills or anything. Cause it was genuinely a young person's club and a student-y club. It wasn't really like a hardcore sort of clubbing or raving type place. So with that in mind, the fact that the atmosphere was just so fantastic and everyone's hugging each other, putting their arms around each other. Every single time I went back in the school holidays or the summer holidays, I'd always round the guys up and be like, you've got to take me to Fifth Ave. And they, of course, they went every weekend, so it was nothing special for them. Yeah. But for me, it was like, let's go. Like, I absolutely loved it. And again, it's one of those songs that I still listen to this day. And it's just got a lot of very, very happy memories of being able to go back and see all my old mates that I kept in touch with.
Yeah. It's such a banger. And I think it's up there with intros for me as well. Just that scream from Rowetta at the beginning, and then just like the sort of, is it Gregorian chanting or whatever they call it, and then obviously the it's Weatherall, isn't it, that does the club mix, and it's phenomenal. And I think there's never ever been a documentary about Mancunian music that hasn't used that in the opening credits, because it just encapsulates. As a lifelong Stone Roses fan, and I'm smothered in Smith's tattoos, there's something about Hallelujah by the Mundies that encapsulates that time like really perfectly. That and Voodoo Ray, I think, like they're the two that just absolutely capture what people outside of Manchester, you know, in 1989, what they wanted. Nothing I wanted more than was to go to the Hacienda, you know, and see this magical club that we'd heard about, that, you know. And it's been really interesting speaking to musicians that DJ'd there or played there and come through it. And it is interesting that, you know, they all sort of say there was a point there where it was magical. And like anything, when it becomes a thing, that generally can then come with a lot of problems, because there's money available there and there's, you know, huge amounts of people there, and obviously it's well documented that, you know, it become quite a problematic place. But the music that come out of there, oh, phenomenal. None more so than Hallelujah.
It was cool for me as well to like sort of go and hear all that kind of Manchester music and indie music, and then take that back to Holland, because like, I guess I would have been in the sixth form at the time. Yeah. So we had a big stereo in the common room, and sort of me and my mates were like in charge of the stereo basically. So I'd go in and then like put all this cool music on that I'd heard that hadn't come out in Holland, or people just didn't know it.
Yeah.
So it definitely earned me a few cool points in the common room, which, as we know, is the world's greatest currency when you're a kid.
Absolutely, mate. Absolutely. Well, with that in mind, let's go back to Manchester. Or are we going to go back to Manchester? I don't know. Tell me the favourite song from an artist from your home county. Where's home?
So home is Drolsden in Manchester. That's where I was born, mm-hmm. Where I spent like sort of the first 13 years. But I think Manchester's a bit of a cheat code for this question, because there's just so many, you know, great songs and great bands that everyone's going to know. And personally as well, I generally feel more at home these days when I go to Holland. Like, I try and go back as much as I can.
Yeah.
Because I just think, you know, when you're a kid, you're a kid. And, you know, you do very limited things that are the same that most kids do. And I did most of my growing up in Holland. Like, I was there for nine and a half years, I think, in total.
And they're key years, right? And going at 13.
They're key years, aren't they? 13 to early 20s. And that's when you develop, like, your taste in music and your taste in a lot of things. So I picked someone from The Hague. And it's a woman called Anouk and a song called Nobody's Wife. She had a really cool story. So she was sort of a really troubled teenager, and she ran away from home a lot. And it got to the point where her parents basically like couldn't handle her, and she ended up in sort of a children's home. And she used to leg it out of the children's home as well. And she went to this rock bar in The Hague, which is somewhere that I used to go when I lived there. And it was mostly just sort of rock music, but every now and again they'd have like open mics and little live shows and stuff. And she started singing at this bar, and some guy just discovered her. And was like, right, you know, we need to pay you to your parents and get, you know, get some stuff signed. And obviously she didn't have any. So it was a whole like convoluted process of actually like, you know, getting her a record deal. Yeah. But she got a record deal quite young. And then I think in her early 20s, she brought out, I can't remember if it was her first or second album. I think it was a second album that Nobody's Wife was on, but that was the first one that kind of got big.
Yeah.
And it was huge in Holland.
Yeah.
And it's a real, like, it's basically girl power for people who wear baggy jeans. That's how I always describe it. It's a real, like, rock anthem.
You could throw it next to, you could throw it in the mix next to like Skunk Anansie, couldn't you? It wouldn't sit out of place in that kind of arena.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, you know, I thought International Women's Day last week as well be a good one to pick. But she's done loads of fantastic songs. She did another one called The Dark, which is really Skunk Anansie.
Yeah.
And the music video to it is inspired by Beetlejuice, so it's a really good watch.
Yeah.
But she's done like a lot more poppy stuff as well, and she's done some really nice ballads. She's done a really nice acoustic ballad about her first boyfriend. So she's got a real good range, but Nobody's Wife for me, like, she just belts it out. And I've seen her do it live. And, you know, I don't think she ever sort of got any massive prominence outside of Holland, really. I know that she went to America to try and get a record deal, and it all kind of fell apart. But she's a national treasure in Holland, and she's still performing live now. And yeah, Nobody's Wife's obviously the show closer that everyone loves. And it's one of those that I always recommend to people. Like, if you're into rock music at all and you just want to hear somebody belt something out, Nobody's Wife's an absolute banger.
Solid choice, mate. Solid choice. Last track. I want you to tell me a song that you think many people may not know that you would like them to hear, please.
Yeah, so this is a song called Theremin by a guy called Ed Scissor. Or Ed Scissortongue, depending on how he feels on any given day. He's a rapper from Cambridge in the UK. And I actually used to work with him.
Okay.
And at the time, I had no idea that he was into music at all. We worked at a video games company in Cambridge. And it was one of those companies where, because it was a video games company, and it's kind of cool for young people to work at a video games company, like, they felt like they were doing you a favor by giving you a job. And everyone had to be super positive and, oh, God, I love this place. And I want to be here for the rest of my life. And I was actually Ed's manager. And you know, used to do like performance reviews and stuff, and he'd be like, oh yeah, I can't wait to spend the rest of my career here. I had no idea that he was basically starting this music career off, and he had no idea that I didn't give a fuck about this place either, and I wanted to be an MMA journalist. We both sat there bullshitting each other for a couple of years, and it wasn't until after I left that a mutual friend of ours sent me a clip of a YouTube video of a song that he'd done with a guy called Dirty Dyke, who's another rapper from that same group. He's also got some really, really good tunes over the years as well. And I just started listening to his music. I was like, holy shit, this is actually really, really good. He did an album about 10, 11 years ago now called Better Luck Next Life. And it's probably one of my favorite UK rap albums. It's got some incredible songs on it. He's just an excellent wordsmith. And as someone who's like spent a lot of time writing and a lot of time talking, I just really appreciate wordsmithery. I'm not sure if that's even a word, but it is now. I really enjoy like the way he sort of builds worlds in his songs. There was a song on that album called Max about a drug addict, and I'm not going to lie, it's a really, really bleak song, and it's not kind of like a traditional format. You know, there's no choruses or anything. It just verse after verse after verse. And by the end of the 5 minutes, like, you feel really grimy. Like, you feel like you're inside Max's head, and just his ability to do that with words is incredible. And Theremin, I think for me, is probably my favorite song that he's done. It's all kind of like about sort of a post-apocalyptic world that's breaking down, and just the imagery that he creates with it is fantastic. You know, it's not a song to stick on if you need cheering up or anything, but it's just a great one to listen to over and over. The music's great. I think it was produced by a guy called Lamplighter, who he's done a lot of work with. But for me, it's just the words. And there's a bar in it where he says something like, right hand swinging like a bag full of spanners. And I nicked it and used it in commentary and got it on TV for him. So he was very pleased about that. And we hadn't talked for years and years and years. And someone sent it to him while a Cage Warriors fan was watching it, and sent him the clip. And then we got back in touch and started talking. And I invited him to a show at the end of last year, and he turned up and gave me a copy of his book.
Oh,
and
amazing.
We had a good old catch up, which is just fantastic. But yeah, Theremin, Ed Scissor, check it out. It's a great song.
Oh, we make it easy for people to check it out, Brad, because we put together a Spotify playlist to accompany the pod with all of these amazing records that we've spoken about today. I want to talk about Brad Wharton a little bit now. I presume you're going to be... I mean, we're recording this on the 13th of March. We're in the week leading up to a huge UFC event this Saturday in London, and there's a huge Cage Warriors event this Friday. You going to be doing your thing there?
Yeah, absolutely. So we started our calendar last week in California. So it was the first time I've been out to commentate in America, which was pretty cool.
Amazing.
I got to live in a casino for a week. So considerably poorer than I was when I when I went over there. But, you know, them's the breaks. But yeah, big Cage Warriors event coming up this Friday to sort of coincide with UFC weekend. And then we're in the BT Sports Studio the week after that. And then April, Manchester, Dublin, Rome in May. It's a busy year for Cage Warriors. I can't wait. Looking forward to calling some good fights.
Wonderful. And if people want to keep up to speed with everything you're doing, where's the best place to follow you, Brad?
So I'm on Twitter and occasionally Instagram at MMABrad48, and Cage Warriors is at Cage Warriors. Lots of good stuff dropping there. Promo videos if you're into the old fisticuffs. There's definitely something for you.
Wonderful. Brad, it's been an absolute joy. Thanks so much for coming on today.
No, thank you for having me, man. Like I say, always enjoy chatting records in my spare time. Absolutely love it. Thank you.
Wonderful. I'm going to press stop. Don't go anywhere. Oh, love it. Love it, love it, love it. Cheeky mention of Frank Sidebottom. We got to talk about Essex Finest, The Prodigy. We got to talk about the banger that is Hallelujah by the Mundies. And yeah, just a lovely chat, and what a top lad. So huge thanks to Brad for giving up his time and coming on. Go give him a follow on the socials, and if you've never dabbled into the world of mixed martial arts, I know it's not for everyone, and I'm sure by now you all know that I'm a super fan. The Cage Warriors events A majority of them are in the UK, and they're wonderful. And I can't urge you enough to go and check them out. So go check out Cage Warriors and give Brad a follow. I'll be back next time. In the meantime, go check out the back catalogue, because there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of episodes, all for free, with all your favourite rock bands and comedians and actors and you name it, they've been on, like I say, nearly 500 episodes, and they're all to be enjoyed. Go to the website and it'll direct you wherever you need to go to access whatever you need to access. Offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. I'll be back next time. Be nice to each other in the meantime. See you soon. Bye-bye.